You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 16 September, we got U.S. retail data due 2:30 this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Ken Yanyana from ScoPrime. Outsurance results, really, really good. Oceania update, hey, fishing stocks, man, they're a horror. And then FOMC, everyone expects a cut tomorrow. My question to Kia, are we going to get two or three cuts over the rest of the year? Sunet and Sarah from Just Money. It's Will's week, but perhaps more importantly is don't forget your digital assets. I want to dig into that. And then Carl Wales from Legacy Art, investing in art as a collective to reduce risks and manage what can be very expensive pieces. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Discovery Health Medical Scheme member loss continues. The number of lives covered has been flat for a decade, with growth coming from closed schemes and non-scheme products. Business Day inflation expectations drop to record low as new target begins to shape sentiment. Decline is driven by downward revisions from analysts and trade unions. Business executives left long-term forecasts unchanged. Morning markets, US was green. We've got the S&P up 0.5%, Nasdaq up 0.8%. The East is all green. Sydney, 0.6% higher. Tokyo up almost a third. Hong Kong just 0.1% higher, and Tencent 0.2%. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 3,719. Brent 67.58. Platinum up a dollar at 1,409. And palladium down a couple of dollars, 1,216. Rand 17.34. Bitcoin 115,400. And top 40 opening call, red open 80 points or 0.08% lower.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Telling now with Kenyon Yana, Scope Prime. Kia, always appreciate the early morning. Outsurance results yesterday, and I was reminded, of course, they were spun out of RMI, where there was all sorts of other bits and pieces in there. Now we've got them as a clean business and a good set of numbers. Helped in part, no big disasters, and that's always the case with the shorter insurers. Your take on it. The market certainly liked it, pushed the stock up nicely. Your thoughts on outsurance?
I think what you said was quite pertinent. You said it was a clean set of results. And what I always say is that when you're looking for an insurance entry, it's very tough not to go, when you're going to short-term and long-term insurance, not to get a very confused business or a more diversified business. But if you want an entry truly into the short-term insurance market, outsurance is always a great entry, but it's never cheap because it's such a quality business. The problem, I always say, in short-term insurance, people are more willing to change the insurer because there's more flexibility in the gross written premium. Mm. And it has showed in the new business sales, especially in South Africa and in Australia. And if you've seen double-digit volume growth in terms of new business, that tells you it's either the economy is more resilient than we think, which I don't believe is so,
yeah,
or they're just stealing other people's lunches. And that's just purely because of the fact that they have more flexibility on the gross written premiums.
That's actually a great point, and that partly aside, but I take your point. The numbers don't come from booming economies. Numbers come from poaching. Australia, maybe there's some boom happening there. Not a lot here. Oceania, fish stocks. I have to declare up front, I'm always interested in fish stocks. I always think they look like a great idea, and then I don't, and then I'm always happy that I don't. I mean, is this a sector worth looking at? This time it was Peru fish oil prices collapsed because Peru was back in the market. It's a good protein, but it seems to be a troubling environment to get the protein out of the ocean to consumers.
I don't like businesses where you don't have pricing power and essentially you're just at the whims of supply and demand. And it's essentially almost like mining. It's a basic material that essentially you are just in control over whatever you can control. I think Oceania does well in controlling costs and the management executing on strategy. The problem that they have is the fact that global fish oil prices have just plummeted by 50%. And what could they probably have done about that? Probably nothing. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it's not even their fault that they're not doing that well, but you're looking at they can fish business, which has done well, which is an indicator of where our economy is that people are downgrading in terms of the proteins that they access. But I mean, you look at the European business as well in terms of lobsters and higher end proteins mm-hmm. within the fish stocks is also not doing well because of the fact that that economy is not doing well. So essentially, you're just at the whim of the market, and it's not a business I am entirely happy to be in at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I have fortunately always managed to avoid it, although I have had far too many long, hard looks and it's been close. Let's touch to FOMC. Tomorrow is the FOMC meeting. Expectation is we get a cut tomorrow. That seems almost baked in. I'm now hearing some folks saying maybe a 50-point cut. I don't know about that. My question to you is, initially the thought was we'll get two more cuts out of the three meetings this year. Now I see everyone's shifting to three cuts from the three meetings. Where do you sit? Two cuts? Three cuts?
It's three cuts and three cuts next year. And essentially, what I've been looking at is the futures market, which is essentially has ignored everything else that is happening politically in terms of the pressure, which is on the Fed, as well mm-hmm. as how many members are going to be voting today. Is it going to be 10? Is it going to be 12? Is it going to be 11? Because we're still waiting on a Supreme Court judgment on Cook's appointment, as well as the fact that the Senate is supposed to vote for a new member to be coming in. But I think that what is going to be important is this September meeting is quite important in terms of tonality. I don't remember the last time I have to look at tone in messaging since probably Matric, but I think it's worth. What is the FOMC going to be looking at? Are they going to still be concerned about the high inflation, or is the soft jobs data going to be their driver? If the soft jobs data is going to be their driver, expect more cuts and expect more aggressive cuts.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. Which side of the coin they look at is going to define how many cuts. But there it is, three for this, three for next. We'll leave it there. Kenyanyana, Scope Prime, always appreciate the early morning. A poll today, back to those insurance. Is this a good investment? Certainly they were eating somebody's lunch out there. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Standard Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Sunet Ansara, head of Group Legal and Legal Insurance, Just Money. Sunet, appreciate the early morning time. National Wills Week this week, so we get to chat wills, a piece that came out from yourself yesterday, talking around the wills, but talking around the digital aspect of it. I mean, obviously, some of the easy stuff here would be your cryptocurrencies and maybe you've got some NFTs and online financial accounts. There is an easy part to it, perhaps. We'll get to the rest in a moment. But this still needs to be included in your will if you've got any of these on blockchain assets.
That's correct, Simon, definitely. You know, and it's something that people forget about. And I do think it's also because cryptocurrency for a long time wasn't really regulated in our country, where people try to actually kind of do things on a lowdown. But now that it's recognized, I do think that including these things in your will is absolutely vital, and it needs to be treated in exactly the same way as you treat traditional assets.
Yeah, and I like your point there. I mean, it's now a fully regulated industry. 10 years ago, maybe not so much, but now it is. It needs to be there. You also made a point, and I really like this. There's other digital assets that we have, and assets might be in a bit of an inverted commas there, but we'll have photos, ebooks, I mean, you know, email and social media accounts, loyalty. We actually need to also include these, and maybe that's less about because they've got value, more about it's sort of kind of transferring that ownership and that process to somebody else.
Absolutely. Simon, you know what? Listing those things are so important because obviously a lot of the time it gets overlooked. It also makes it easier for your loved ones to access and manage them after you've passed. And it prevents these accounts from lying dormant and becoming vulnerable to cyber fraud. So as you say, like a lot of these assets do not necessarily have a monetary value, but to list them is so important. I don't know about you, but I know quite a couple of people that unfortunately passed away during COVID, and they still have active LinkedIn accounts because their family just never had their credentials, login credentials, to close those accounts. So, you know what, it actually just makes it so much easier to have these things noted. There is a way that you can do it. Also, because I don't know about you, but privacy law is a big thing in our country. It's a big thing everywhere in the world. So service providers are quite sticky when it comes to login credentials and just informal instructions from partners or spouses. So to nominate a digital heir in your will with the authority and instructions to actually manage these online presences for you, close accounts and even memorialize some of them appropriate if you wish to do so, is worth gold. And also go and think about all your digital accounts that you have. Make a list of it. Record your login details and actually add it as an annexure to your will. Make sure it's signed and witnessed by the same witnesses as you used for your will. So make it a proper annexure to your will so that it can never be, you know, like disputed by any service provider, and it will stand up to any legal scrutiny, basically.
I like that. A digital heir, someone who and again, these might not have, you know, my LinkedIn account has no value to anyone, but there is a case of sort of that cleaning up and, you know, finding the photos I might have stored somewhere, shutting down, etc. And I really like that, nominating an individual person to manage it. And another important point you make, and this perhaps is less around a will and having an heir, but just documents generally. You talk around, you know, most of us have got access to a scanner. Truthfully, we can take photos of our important documents and store these digitally as well. You know, marriage certificates, insurance policies, all of those sort of things, store them digitally for easy access while we're living, as well as when we're passed.
Absolutely, Simon. And also, but what is very important, well, first of all, when you do pass, I think there's so much trauma and stress in the family. The last thing you want to do is add more stress by now having to scramble around finding ID documents and marriage certificates, like you say, and like title deeds to homes, etc., etc. So to scan it and keep it in a safe place is absolutely vital. And also another thing is copies of your will itself. Have copies of that. Share it with your executors, share it with your financial advisor and key family members. But also very important, remember, the Master of the High Court will require your original will to actually manage your estate. So that you need to give very specific instructions to where you keep the original document for after you've passed. Because with a copy, you're not going to get anywhere and there is going to be problems in winding up your estate. So have your scanned copies. It's all good and well, but make sure that the people who need to know understand and have a clear understanding of where you keep your original will.
That's a great point. I always forget that. The Master Supreme Court, as you said, they want the original. They don't want a copy. Make sure folks can find that. We'll leave that there. Sunet and Sara, Just Money. Appreciate the early morning time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Carl Wales, Legacy Art co-CEO. Carl, art as an asset class, I suppose the first point is folks are thinking, hang on, how does this work? There are indices which track returns, and returns have been good. I mean, they beat the S&P over the longer term, which is a fair benchmark to compare against.
Absolutely. The most commonly quoted index is actually the Art Price 100 index, which tracks the performance of the top 100 artists in the world by turnover. And as you say, it has outperformed by around 0.2% a year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but over time it compounds.
Yeah, no, you do that. I think that's what over since 2000. So you do that for 25 years. It adds up. How big is the art industry globally? Or is that an impossible question? Is there a way to kind of measure it?
Yes. So in terms of, I suppose, to use a share-based term, mm-hmm. in terms of market capitalization, the estimate is that the art market is around $2 trillion in value, which is actually similar in size to the Bitcoin market, still not quite as large as the gold market. In terms of annual market liquidity, which is obviously the easier metric to crack, the art market is around a $65 billion US dollar market a year. So that's obviously 1.3 trillion rand.
Okay, chunky numbers. Let's turn to fractional ownership platforms such as Legacy Art. How does this work? Because, I mean, I often see art, I often love it, then I see the price tag and I politely exit the gallery. How does fractional art work?
Yeah, so we basically trying to give ordinary people access to investment-grade art. Mm-hmm. And as I stated earlier, the Art Price 100 Index only tracks the performance of the top 100 artists by market turnover. Mm-hmm. And that's a group of artists which is almost impossible for the normal person to access. So what's termed investment grade art is anything that retails for more than 10 million rand or $500,000 per painting. So obviously not accessible to anyone except the very rich. And so we are trying to enable normal people to buy exposure to this asset class by essentially buying shares in a company which invests in artwork of this nature.
Would I have then exposure to a single painting? Is it more like a collection of paintings or artists?
So most of the products that are available on the market at the moment, and the best known product is Masterworks, they actually offer a fractional interest in single artworks. Mm-hmm. Where Legacy tries to distinguish itself is, you know, rather allow our investors to buy a curated collection of artworks. And, you know, we're essentially just applying a modern portfolio theory to art.
Carry on. I'm interested in the modern portfolio theory. I mean, as I say, I love art. I go to galleries. I'm just not, I know what I don't know and I know what I love, but I don't know what's good or bad necessarily.
Yes, absolutely. So some people might say, well, if you buy exposure to two or three Masterworks pieces, mm-hmm. you know, that's diversification of a kind. But the reality is there's a little bit more thought which goes into achieving diverse exposure across the broader art benchmark. So that's what we're mm-hmm. trying to do, because, as you know, certain individual artists or certain movements in art can fall in and out of favor. And we're trying to obviously prevent our investors from having too much exposure to any particular piece or artist.
Gotcha. And you make a good point there around, I mean, it's perhaps more around names and movements or styles, as you say, than what catches the eye. There are trends in the art space.
Yes, absolutely. I'm more the financial guy at Legacy. So Tony, who's my co-CEO and our chief curator, he's a better person to answer questions around artistic movements and artists. But yes, absolutely correct.
A question that suddenly occurs to me. So you've bought a collection of paintings, you've got a collection of investors. Where does the art sit? I mean, is it now in a vault somewhere, or can it be sent to a gallery? Or, I mean, it's not going to come to my house, I imagine, but somewhere so that it still can be seen.
Well, actually, Simon, interesting you mentioned that. What also distinguishes Legacy is that we do allow our larger investors mm-hmm. to have display rights. So people will be able to have some of these pieces in their home. And I think up to now, it's actually been quite sad that a lot of fractional art vehicles don't allow people to put art on display, because obviously the tangible benefits of art are one of their biggest selling points.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Last question, and you said you're the money guy. I mean, we're talking art here, which is a different type of asset class, but at the end of the day, it's an asset class, it's an investment. And I imagine old school sort of investment concepts remain around diversifying, such as what you're doing, around thinking long term, watching fees. I mean, it's still kind of like the same sort of rules are going to come into play.
Absolutely. And you mentioned how artists performed over longer periods and performance has been very good. There are also some macroeconomic trends which apply to the art world and which have been driving those returns. When it comes to, you know, very well-known artists, there mm-hmm. is a scarcity of supply. Mm-hmm. There's also increasing wealth disparities globally. So the very rich are getting richer and richer and certainly at a faster rate than the man on the street. And finally, we're seeing a lot of art traded online at the moment, and where that has an impact is that suddenly, rather than, you know, a couple of hundred people sitting in an auction room, anyone can invest in these works. In addition to all the other factors, yeah, you've got these sort of macro super trends, which are also driving an increase in prices.
Yeah, and you make a great point about the online. I mean, in the olden days, it would have been a Christie's art show with, I don't know, a dozen or two people in the room. Suddenly, we can all log on and partake, or in my case, oftentimes just watch. We'll leave it there. Carl Wells, Legacy Art Co-CEO. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday at Sunlam Private Wealth. We're talking the City Lodge results. Occupancy slipped, although it was undergoing refurbishments, and that is now behind them. We asked if local leisure was still worth investing in. Almost half said yes, great potential. A third said only for the gambling. The rest said nobody can afford leisure anymore. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Yeba yetu.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.